across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. It is 6:06 on this Wednesday morning, April 10th, 2024. It is another beautiful day to have you here up north, live from Lake Wissota, from wherever you're listening, across the Civic Media Radio Network or through the Civic Media app. If you're joining us by podcast or on social media, checking out the video feed, we are glad you're here. I've got a question for you. If you're listening to us live, are you looking to the east and noticing there's this little bit of brightness out there? You can actually see things outside. Our long slide back into early morning daylight is progressing very nicely, thank you, and it's making things a little easier for those of us who are all on the early shift. If you'd like to reach us today, our phone number is 855-75-CIVIC. Be sure to use that if you'd like to text us a message as well, or better yet, use the Civic Media app and text us a message. You can email us, you can post comments on social media. We'd love to hear back from you on the things that we're talking about today. So, you ask, what are we talking about today? Well, in our climate check report, coming up in less than 30 minutes, we talked to Melissa Baldoff about some tough transitions. It's one thing to say that you want to, you know, stop, say, getting your electricity from coal, and that you want to get it from renewable sources. But if you're not ready to make that leap yet all the way, but you don't want your coal plant operating anymore, that leaves you with some options like, say, a natural gas generation for your power plant. But again, it's cleaner than coal, but it's not quite renewable. There are some communities that are wrestling with this transition, and we'll talk to Melissa about that. We will hear from State Senator Kelda Royce about Governor Tony Evers yesterday calling the legislature's Joint Finance Committee into special session. Now, Republicans have pretty much ignored every other request from the governor for a special session. This one's just for the Joint Finance Committee because they're the ones holding up $125 million to clean up PFAS contamination. And so we'll have the latest on that showdown coming up in just a couple of minutes here. In our second hour, we are going to talk to retired D.C. police officer Michael Fanone. He was one of the many law enforcement officers attacked and badly beaten by a mob during the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. He's in Wisconsin this week on a speaking tour, warning of the dangers of embracing violent political rhetoric, words that can motivate others to engage in violence. And Congressman Mark Pocan will join us live around 7:30 with an update on the ongoing saga of the Republican soap opera that is delaying aid to Ukraine and Israel and taking care of other high priorities here at home. So we got a lot coming up today. Let's check out some of the temperatures at 6 a.m. around the state. In all of these places with fine Civic Media radio stations, it's 39 degrees here on Lake Wissota, home of 93.5 The Tap. Hayward is at 30 degrees, Park Falls 32. In Wausau, where you're listening to Bull Falls Radio, it's 37 degrees right now. Green Bay's at 45. Listeners to the Eagle in La Crosse are at 44 degrees. Wisconsin Rapids 42. Oshkosh 45, Madison 43, and in the sleepy little hamlet outside of Milwaukee, known as Waukesha, Wisconsin, it's 43 degrees, where we also find Greg Bach standing by with, is that a Brewers playoff t-shirt from years gone by? It is. What year is that? I can't read your...
It's 21. Like
2021.
Right. I decided I wanted to try something new, though, Pat. Can I try something new?
Yes.
Hit it. I want intro music now, and I'm in control, so I get intro music.
you want walk-up music.
All right, that's it. I just wanted to try that.
I like the initiative. I do.
I also didn't realize there was an intro into that intro music.
I mean, you're literally tooting your own horn there by bringing up the brass section to bring you in. So, yeah.
How you doing, Pat?
Good work. I'm fine. So who was that we were hearing?
That's the intro music for John Cena. He's a very popular wrestler, actor. Yes. You hate on wrestling, but you know, it's
no, but I really like him. I like Dwayne Johnson, The Rock. I just never saw them in their wrestling days.
Oh, you know, so good stuff.
For those who appreciate it, absolutely. I just like that. You know, they clearly got the deal of how much of this is acting and to be a character, mm-hmm. and that they were able to take those skills then and go mainstream with them.
Yeah.
I think is very cool. Now I'm not going to get into comments The Rock made over the weekend about politics, cause I don't have it in front of me and I don't want to misspeak, but again, from an acting standpoint, I've really enjoyed watching them.
Yeah,
it's good. So you picked some good walk-up music there.
Thank you very much.
Cause you're a bit of a character yourself.
Oh, I thank you. Thank you very much. I don't know what you're talking about, Pat. I don't know what you're talking about at all.
Not even in the least, of course not. It's 6:12 right now. I'm gonna hit sports a little bit early just because there's a bit of a concern. And I don't know, Greg, if you saw the video.
Yeah, I just heard about it, actually.
Giannis going down on his own. He wasn't a collision or anything like that. He was starting to jog back up the court and just crumpled. Oh, and so The Bucks did snap their four-game losing streak, but their two-time MVP is hurt. Giannis, at the very least, strained his left calf in the third quarter of the Bucks' 104-91 victory over the Boston Celtics. But Doc Rivers says that Giannis Antetokounmpo was undergoing an MRI on his calf, and he would have his Achilles tendon tested today. God, I hope it's not the Achilles, because that's it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even, the injuries that can happen playing those sports and just like, mm-hmm. it's not so much, like you said, like it, he didn't collide, it wasn't a thing, just when your body says, nope,
I'm done with this.
Oh my good gravy.
I thought, well, maybe it's just cramps, maybe it's some kind of a strain. Again, there's only a couple of games left in the regular season and come to playoffs. And, you know, without Giannis, I don't like our odds as much.
I mean, I was happy to see him beat the Celtics. That was a pretty good. I don't know much about basketball, but I do know that we need to beat the Celtics every chance we can get.
Yes, and that was good because, again, we're looking at seeding for the playoffs, and Boston is way up there in the seeding right now. So anytime you can kind of crack the code and figure out how to beat them, it's a good thing. Here was the weird thing about the game last night.
Okay.
There were so few fouls that the Boston Celtics became the first team in NBA history to not shoot a single free throw, and the Bucks themselves only shot two free throws. In the entire game. In NBA history, there's never been a case where there were so few fouls that teams didn't go to the line and shoot free throws.
Very weird. Interesting. That's some, I guess, some clean playing or some sleeping refs.
I think I'm going to go with the clean playing just because, again, both of these teams, I don't want to say they were sleepwalking, but they're both clearly in the playoffs. Yeah. So they're just kind of staying tuned up and didn't go at it really hard, clearly. You know, it's almost like... it was almost like, say, an NBA All-Star game where there is no defense. You know, it was kind of along those lines.
Giannis Antetokounmpo went for 325 points tonight.
I shouldn't laugh because that's still very possible.
Yeah.
That one of these years it could happen. The Bucks do have their final regular season home game tonight versus Orlando. Then they're at Oklahoma City Friday night. They're at Orlando on Sunday afternoon. Catch tonight's game starting at 6:30 on Lake Air in Amory and locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids. Meanwhile, for the Brewers, Christian Yelich, he's getting off to a good start.
I know. And I was saying that before opening day because it's like you're now with Jackson Chourio being the new hot commodity there. It was like we were in like 2018 with Christian Yelich and Ryan Braun.
Exactly.
And I was asking the question, you know, is Christian dealing with the idea of becoming I use the term with all the respect, the elder statesman of the team.
Yeah. Or does he go the Aaron Rodgers, Brett Favre route?
Yeah. And his injury, you know, even though it was years ago, it's still, I felt like he was still hampered by that ankle injury, but man, good. Yes. This is exactly, I want Christian Yelich to have like a dynamite season.
And he's having a good start. He drove in three runs. Blake Perkins drove in three runs, helping Joe Ross and the Brewers beat Cincinnati 9-5 last night.
Yep.
Perkins and Sal Frelick each had three hits. Milwaukee had 13 overall. Jake Bowers had two RBIs. Ross earned his first big league win since June of 2021 when he was with the Washington Nationals, because Ross has been recovering from his second Tommy John surgery that he had in June of 2022. So almost 2 years later, he's back. That's so good on Russ. Yeah.
Good bats. Good bats happening right now.
Very much so. On the downside, pitcher Devin Williams still having back issues. He was transferred to the 60-day injured list. Brewers lefty Wade Miley will make his first start of the season this evening in Cincinnati. And then the Brewers have a noontime game tomorrow to wrap up the series in Cincinnati and head out to Baltimore. This evening's game, the broadcast starts at 5:05 on News from the Center in Richland Center, WRJN in Racine, Oshkosh Air Support, and 98Q Country in Park Falls. So we're going to see Luke Mathers tomorrow, right?
Correct.
Because tonight is Top Chef night.
Yes, that's so, what I will just tomorrow I'll bring the music up for that segment, and then I'll just take a nap.
Why do you not want to hear about the chef testants?
Sent me a message yesterday, and he goes, "The disdain in your face while we were talking."
I believe that chef testants is to you what Paul McCartney's Wonderful Christmas Time is to me. It's triggering,
It Dr. Lyerly's put it best. She's like, sounds like something you go to the doctor for. I need to get my chef testants checked.
Yes, but they will be competing tonight on Top Chef. We'll talk to Luke, and then I was tying that into the Brewers because he knows I have been I've been working him hard for Yacht Rock Night, which would be July 26th.
Oh, we should make this a thing.
We need to make this a thing. There are enough Civic Media tickets, I believe, that we could do something not just for ourselves, but maybe bring a few listeners along. And we need to come up with some kind of a contest for the tickets, and obviously with a Yacht Rock theme.
Is it a giveaway, or is it like a special?
It is.
Night?
You get a captain's hat.
But do you have to buy the special ticket to get the cab set, or is it just they're giving them out the door?
They're just giving them out at the
awesome.
Door.
I'm in.
Yes. So there. We need a contest idea. Just looking to see if there's anything else there. Nope. Presented by WinTrust, Wisconsin's bank. And it's like something right out of Caddyshack. Cool. So we'll have to plan toward that. All right. The latest on Governor Evers calling Republicans back into session, fighting over PFAS contamination. How is this still a thing? Live from Lake Wissota, this is Up North News Radio on the Civic Media Radio Network. Brian Setzer of the Stray Cats has a birthday today, and he's in senior citizen territory, turning 65 years old today. We'll have that and more coming up in today's history lesson, about a half hour from now. Well, we've heard several times since Governor Tony Evers assumed office with a Republican-led legislature that he would call the legislature into session for some important issues to say, hey guys, this is an important issue. Why don't we set all the politics aside and why don't we try to work out something together? Republican legislators have responded with words that are not suitable for radio. And rather than coming in to debate and compromise and reach agreement, they have done the procedural equivalent of thumbing their nose or offering up a middle finger. Coming into session, just a couple of them, to gavel it in, gavel it out, and basically ignore the governor. In doing so, of course, they're ignoring Wisconsin voters who are paying them to get things done. For example, get industrial chemicals, out of our drinking water. We have, over the years, been discovering the many different ways that an entire class of industrial chemicals known by PFAS, which is an acronym for a very long chemical name, These chemicals are used in things like, you know, waterproofing, you know, Scotch Guard for fabric, for nonstick, Teflon type coating, firefighting foam, a whole host of products. Along the way, these chemicals found their way into the ground and then into the groundwater. And now we're learning more and more about the chemicals and that some of them do have a negative effect on human health. They're called forever chemicals because they don't break down easily. They're man-made chemicals. They're not designed to break down it by just the products I told you about. You can tell they're designed to be durable. So they've made it in the groundwater supply, and that's caused issues and expensive issues to remediate these areas, to test, to monitor. And frankly, if some of the people and companies dumping them are still around, they should have to help pay for some of this cost. Don't you agree? Well, the legislature in their budget passed $125 million to clean these things up. Now, stop me if you've heard this before. Well, no, don't, because we're going to say it again and again. What Republicans have done with the budget is they've budgeted a total amount. And in normal times, when the budget is passed, the legislature's work is done. It then goes to the executive branch, where the agencies there, like the DNR, figure out from that pot how they're going to spend that money to address whatever it is in the budget the money is designed for. But this legislature is saying, oh, no, we're not going to release the money. You have to come back to us with each individual request and say, Mother, may I? Which is not workable, and also a way for the legislature to essentially not spend the money that they claim they're going to be spending. And that's what they're doing right now. Not a dime of that $125 million has gone toward any kind of cleanup or enforcement or anything like that. So Governor Evers yesterday said, well, rather than call the whole legislature into special session, he's calling the legislature's Joint Finance Committee into session, because it's the Joint Finance Committee that draws up the budget for the legislature, made up of reps from the Assembly and senators from the Senate. That's the group that's the holdup. So he's just calling that committee into special session. Democratic Senator Kelda Royce from Madison is a member of that committee. And I asked her, here's a little snippet of our discussion. I asked her, what is the main obstacle Republicans are putting up to taking PFAS contamination seriously?
The most significant sticking point is that Republicans refused to take a provision out of their legislation that would basically prevent the DNR from being able to handle future pollution, future contamination. And in my view, the reason we have a DNR is so that they can help when there's a crisis, right? They can respond, they can promulgate rules, they can help protect us from pollution. So Republicans wanted to basically put that poison pill in it, and they weren't, you know, there isn't necessarily a dispute about where the money should go. It's about whether or not we should use that as a vehicle to get this poison pill passed to kneecap the DNR.
The folks that you work with and serve with there talk about law and order and backing the blue and everything like that, and talking about backing law enforcement. What does it say when Republicans don't want to back law enforcement when it comes to our natural resources, in fact, would like to impede that kind of law enforcement for our natural resources?
It says that they want to obstruct justice, people who are victims of pollution.
The Republicans will say, they, of course, would rather insult the DNR and say they're going to punish innocent landowners who had nothing to do with the actual pollution. Do you see validity in that point, or do you see safeguards that are built in?
No, I think that is a red herring of an argument, and it's just meant to distract people from the fact that year after year, Republicans promise they're going to do something, and then year after year, they use the complicated mechanisms of, you know, these institutions that they have a power hold on, like the legislature, to stop any progress from happening. They take holy pictures, they pretend like they've done something good, and then they block it from actually being enforced. That's their pattern of behavior.
That's Senator Kelda Royce talking to her late yesterday. But in fact, she or somebody affiliated with her put up a video snippet on social media from nearly a year ago of her warning that this was likely to happen, that if Republicans kept language in the budget the way that it is, they could do exactly what they're doing now. So again, they're saying, we're not going to release this to the DNR unless Governor Evers signs this bill we're passing that essentially, you know, hamstrings the DNR and prevents enforcement. Again, under the guise of, well, the DNR will force people to clean things up on their land, even though they're the victims, they didn't dump it. But those safeguards are already in there. And this looks much more like a case of, as the senator is saying, a head fake of saying, oh, we're going to solve this problem, but then in fact not solve the problem in order to protect industry, to protect the polluters, to protect an entire class that should not have to pay, in their view, the DNR, the state taxpayers, should have to pay for cleanup as much as possible. So the money, again, has not been allocated one bit. And you look at something like in Wausau, where Mayor Katie Rosenberg had to be extremely aggressive in finding funding sources for water treatment there. The expense of that may very well have cost her the election last week, especially with a legislature dominated by Republicans that is not doing their share to help local governments with the cost, help landowners, help taxpayers recover the cost from the people who do the polluting. That's where the legislature needs to come back into session, or at least the Joint Finance Committee. The governor's called them to come back in Tuesday of next week. So we will watch and see if they, again, try to take this seriously, or if they continue to play politics in order to protect polluters and prevent any cleanup from happening. Coming up next, Melissa Baldoff is going to join us for our weekly climate check. We're going to talk about the transition from coal to renewable and what some of those transitions, some of the challenges of them, and what they can do to our air quality in the meantime, where things are a little better, but not as good as they could be. It's coming up next here up north. We're back on Up North News Radio with this week's Climate Check with Melissa Baldoff. A couple of subjects to cover. One is actually a follow-up from a story that we did in Hometown Health over a year ago. And both of our stories this week involve natural gas-fueled power plants and what's their role in a transition from, say, coal to much cleaner, greener, renewable forms of energy. Melissa, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, thank you. All right, so let's start up in Superior, where there has been a lot of, well, I guess contention, a lot of contentious debate about whether to put a natural gas plant called the Nemadji Trail Energy Center near a river in an industrial area of Superior. There were a lot of people that were for it at first, thinking that it was some kind of a bridge technology or you know, fail safe. But as more people looked at the potential impact, maybe not so much. Maybe the support is starting to get reduced from there. Is that kind of a fair summation of what they're dealing with in Superior these days?
Yeah, I do think that is. And, the other thing I would say, too, is that, you know, we talked, you know, just recently about, you know, some of the, you know, threats we're seeing to our climate progress coming from local communities that want to stand in the way of progress. But here is an area and a situation where the residents in the area, including tribal leaders, health professionals, and others, really were able to, you know, kind of turn the tide here and set things in the right direction, and to get their city council on board with doing the right thing and to vote against having another public hearing and, you know, to move ahead with their recommendation to, you know, not allow this plant to come in and, you know, pollute the community and contribute to some really, you know, dangerous potential health outcomes. And environmental outcomes, too.
Well, that's where I'm definitely sympathetic to all the parties involved in this, because this is a tricky transition. You're talking about getting away from coal-fired power plants, which are much dirtier, put much more pollution into the atmosphere. But if your community is not exactly ready to go all solar, all wind, all renewable, then is, you know, natural gas, a power plant like that, is that a natural next step? But then you run into the trap that, well, we've got this new plant, we may as well keep using it. And so the transition to greener energy sources lasts longer than it should. In my mind, there's room for a little bit of sympathy on all sides as far as what's best for your community. And I think it comes down to two questions, Melissa. One is it really needed? And then second, if it is needed, does it happen to be located in a bad place from an environmental standpoint? Let's go with the first one first, as I, again, try to express that I hear what both sides are saying. That's a challenge I'm sure other communities are facing as well.
Yeah, I think that's definitely true. You know, there is unfortunately not just a, you know, switch to flip and then we can just have all clean energy all the time everywhere. There is that need for a transition. But the thing that we have heard from, you know, advocates and people working in this field, we've heard them say this over and over and over again, has to be a just transition. It has to be one that is going to ensure that we are doing the least amount of harm to impacted communities, people who have historically been hit the worst and the hardest. We have to ensure that everyone has an opportunity to participate in the success and the wins of the clean energy economy. And I think that's a big part of what the conversations are in communities, is how are we going to do this in a way that is going to be good for everybody and is going to be a win for everybody.
And what also adds a different wrinkle to this is when you get what we would call odd bedfellows in politics. So you have the Northwest Wisconsin Building Trades, which would be looking at all kinds of construction jobs to put this up. And you've got Americans for Prosperity, the Koch brothers funded fossil fuel burners. And in this case, both of those groups would like to see this plant built. And then you have, you know, folks who are much more environmentally conscious, you know, sitting on the other side of this. Then to add another wrinkle to it, Melissa, we've got the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, who are saying, wait a minute, we were not consulted on this. Not only is it about 300 feet from a bend in the Nemadji River, it's about 500 feet or so from a burial site containing the remains of Lake Superior Ojibwe people. And so the whole thing is so complex right now. And I again, got to say, I don't know where they go from here, except to continue talking with one another about those two big questions. Is it needed? Is it needed in this form, maybe? And again, the property. And the property, by the way, gets to a point that you've been making repeatedly when it comes to, you know, climate change, that a lot of these things that, you know, are like power plants, things that, you know, have high emissions to them, are typically located like in an industrial area where, who lives there? Lower income folks, communities of color, they're the ones that would be most impacted by, according to one study here, 2.7 million tons of carbon emissions a year from the plant as it's designed right now.
Exactly. And, you know, I think that, you know, like you said, is this something that is needed? Is it, you know, needed in this exact space? Or is there more opportunity? And it seems like the Superior City Council agrees that there is some more opportunity to take a look at exactly what is needed and where, and hopefully explore, you know, are there other options that can meet their energy needs, you know, and still create some jobs and have a good, you know, be at a good price for the consumers, but without as much pollution, without those potential health risks, and without, you know, disrupting tribal burial grounds. So I think that there's definitely an opportunity to take a look. And I would say that's probably true for a lot of different communities as they think about that transition and making sure it's a just transition. I'm sure that there are going to be communities where this maybe this kind of bridge step, like using natural gas, is going to absolutely have to be the answer. But I think that there are probably a lot of communities where they can meet those energy needs through, you know, renewables and clean energy sources, energy efficiency. And I hope that that's something that people are really looking at and not just assuming that they need to take this step to go to natural gas as they kind of wean off of coal power plants.
Oh, but wait, there's another wrinkle involved in this. And that is concern that if you're putting a shiny new power plant there, that it might lead to data centers, which is something we've talked about before. These data centers are just power hungry, mostly to keep all those servers cool. And cryptocurrency is extremely high energy use. And again, I don't know that there's anything definitive there, except that some, you know, there was talk that one of the potential partners in this project, you know, is supported by others who lead them to think, might this be, you know, something where a data center comes in next or crypto next? And now one is certainly necessary. Data centers are necessary. Crypto, not one of them, not so much. But again, we're going to need the data centers, but that doesn't mean we just plop them down wherever it's convenient.
Right. I agree. And, you know, I have to say, there aren't too many problems that I look around Wisconsin and see and think, you know what we need here? Crypto. That's what would make this better.
Yes, exactly. And by the way, we should say that a lot of the info that we're talking about today comes from our friends over at Healthy Climate Wisconsin, healthyclimatewi.org. But also, I want to give a particular shout out to the Wisconsin Examiner and Isaiah Holmes, who wrote an exhaustive story on the struggle in Superior about where to put this plant. So I would highly recommend Isaiah's story in the Wisconsin Examiner, but also heading over to Healthy Climate Wisconsin and seeing the concerns there. Now we're going to pivot, because we're just going to have to keep following that story as it develops, but now we're going to pivot to another case where a natural gas power plant may be playing a negative role in local air quality. And that's in Beloit. And I don't know that you knew this when we set up the segment today, again, hearing from the folks at Healthy Climate Wisconsin. But we had actually talked to folks from the Beloit area in February of last year. And they said they were just about to start a more intensive monitoring program of air emissions, because they really thought that the air wasn't, you know, great quality around Beloit, but they didn't have the measurements to prove it. It appears, Melissa, they've taken those measurements and the numbers are not good.
They are not. It is really a, you know, a grim headline from the Beloit area that a new World Air Quality Report names Beloit the most polluted regional city in the United States. So this is, you know, a report that analyzed the particulate matter levels from more than 30,000 air monitors in nearly 8,000 cities around the globe. So this is, you know, really, like I said, some grim news for Beloit. I mean, I do think on the one hand, it's a really remarkable effort by the, you know, citizen scientists who really took the action to monitor and report air quality because they knew that there was something that was going on that was bad. You know, I'm sure they were, you know, our health professionals were seeing more poor outcomes, you know, related to pollutants. And they wanted to kind of, you know, make sure they started that dialogue about how to improve air quality with a number and knowing exactly how bad it is. You know, knowing it's bad isn't the same as knowing how bad something is. And you have to know how bad something is to actually be able to fix it. So, you know, on the one hand, it's incredibly, you know, encouraging to know that we have folks who want to work on this, like you said, our partners at Healthy Climate Wisconsin and other advocates. But they, you know, they've got a lot of work to do in Beloit to address these really poor air quality issues.
Right. And again, they needed the numbers, they needed the data first. Here's one piece of data they did know going into this. Rock County is ranked fifth in the state for the rate of children hospitalized with asthma between 2019 and 2021. And yet, as we learned last year, the DNR was not actively monitoring particulate matter in the air. There was one sensor over on like the west side of town. And that's what led Healthy Climate Wisconsin to facilitate this monitoring program. Six different monitors on loan from the EPA that take measurements every 10 minutes. And so now that they've got this data, one of the folks we had on last year is Pablo Torrell, a professor of environmental studies at Beloit College. And he says, now you can look at the power plants, the factories, the vehicles. There's a recently converted coal to gas power plant, you know, that is north of town, I believe. But again, you couldn't do any of this without the data. So this is not about pointing fingers. Well, I'll say it's not about pointing fingers yet, because people would say, well, how do you know? Now you know. Now you got that data, but you needed people that cared, like Brittany Keys. She's a physical therapist. She's a former Beloit City Council member. You need essentially what you said, citizen scientists willing to get involved.
Exactly. You need those citizen scientists. You need people who care about public health. And, you know, I would also be remiss if I didn't note, like you said, those incredibly poor outcomes for kids who are dealing with asthma being hospitalized. And we're also seeing in the same area of the state really poor birth outcomes, especially for women and infants of color. And what an opportunity we have to address a bunch of these issues if we could only get the Republicans in Madison to agree to expand Medicaid.
Oh, Medicaid, and then also stop trying to, you know, hamstring the Department of Natural Resources when they're trying to enforce things that would keep our natural resources healthier. Melissa Baldoff, thank you so much. We covered two important stories, ones that we definitely have to continue to monitor and follow up. Thanks, Melissa. Have a great day.
Thanks, you too.
Today's history lesson is next. You're up north. Scream now. Yeah, just like that. I don't know how Katrina Leskinich of Katrina and the Waves didn't have more hits. That's such a good, nice little feel-good, you know, bebopper from the late 80s. Katrina turned 64 years old today on today's list of birthdays and musical history and actual history and things you didn't learn in school. Or maybe Melissa Kay did when she was attending all that time ago. Melissa,
I learned this song from Secret to My Success with Michael J. Fox.
Oh, okay. I love that movie. So many weird, not great, like today's scenes, like, but still.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't hold up in all those things, but.
That's a deep cut. Yeah. I'd long forgotten about that movie.
I saw that movie in the theaters.
Whoa. Yeah.
What was the.
I had it recorded on a VHS tape.
Similarly,
don't tell anybody.
Michael J. Fox was in another one with Joan Jett, I believe it was.
They had
a song together. Was it Break of Day or?
Yeah, I think it was Break. Hold on, I'm gonna look it up. You talk.
He's gonna look that up while we get into. Speaking of 80s, we mentioned Brian Setzer earlier from the Stray Cats. Light of Day. Thank you, Brian Setzer. 65 years old today.
Doing all this stuff now.
Got a lot of birthdays and birthday anniversaries today. NFL great John Madden was born this day in 1936. He passed away in 2021. Singer and actor Mandy Moore is 40 years old today. Singer Maren Morris is 34. Actor Daisy Ridley from Star Wars is 32 years old today. And today is the 65th birthday, not just of Brian Setzer, but also born that same day, Kenneth Babyface Edmonds. And we're going to play a little Eric Clapton in the background, simply because you hear Babyface in the background as well on guitar and backing vocals.
But not now, getting vaccinated.
Now, you may not have a lot of Babyface in your collection, you think. As co-founder of LaFace Records with L.A. Reid, the things that he wrote and produced, groups like TLC, Usher, Tony Braxton, he wrote The Whispers, Rock Steady, Boys to Men's End of the Road, and I'll Make Love to You, the Exhale Shoop Shoop song for Whitney Houston.
It's just the way you're saying it.
He just produced for so many. Stop being so suburban over there, you.
Exhale, shoop, shoop, shoop. I'll Make Love to You. And this stunning classic, Change the World by Eric Clapton. He's become a piece of trash lately. I'm so disappointed in Eric Clapton.
I feel like you're my youth translator over here.
Yes, I am. As I stroke my gray beard, if I'm your youth translator, you're in trouble, sir.
Yeah.
You just listed off my high school playlist.
See?
I hear Pat Kreitlow's got the Riz.
don't do
just
that.
Just like Quick Trip's chicken.
Yeah.
No.
I saw that.
No.
I'm like, come on. All right, that's officially dead. Riz is gone. Mm-hmm. It's done.
Yep. This was an ill-fated day for the Titanic, which began its maiden voyage today in 1912. Mm. Yeah, things didn't work out well for them. Let's see. Number one on the album chart this day in 1976 was the juggernaut album Frampton Comes Alive by Peter Frampton.
Wow.
Hey, this was high technology.
I know.
Back in the day.
I mean, it's a talk box is still amazing.
That's a voice box, right?
It's called a talk box. So what happens is you put a rubber tube in your mouth, and as you're playing, you sing the notes you're playing, and that's how that tone is.
I was in a band for a few years called Checkered Past, and one of the guitar players had that, and the tube was so disgusting.
Oh, yeah,
I can't believe you're putting that in your mouth.
Yeah. So, Pat, I'm going to ask you a really super quick question here, and yes, I'm going to employ the fact that you were
old.
You were around, and how old were you when this album came out?
I would have been 12 years old.
How big was this record?
Oh, I had to hold back trying to state how big this record was at the time. I mean, and it was the thing until the next year when Fleetwood Mac's Rumors came out.
Oh, my God.
But these were albums that everybody had. The tunes were on radio everywhere. I'm sure on Z100 here in Eau Claire, on the old KDWB AM in the Twin Cities. Who was the rocker back then? WOKY in Milwaukee. Oh yeah, playing nothing but
93 QFM probably was the one here in Milwaukee or in this area. I remember there was a joke in Wayne's World where she's showing him records. She's like, "I got Frampton Comes Alive." He's like, "So what? Everyone has that. If you lived in the suburbs, they sent you that album like samples of Tide."
That reminds me, the old man said, we should actually do one of these days a show or a segment dedicated to some of those old AM rocker stations around Wisconsin. You know, who they were and some of the old boss DJs they used to tell them. Anyway, on this day in 1970, Paul McCartney announced that he was leaving the Beatles. Elton John's self-titled album was released this day in 1970, which included the tune Your Song. On the national calendar today, Melissa, today is National Hug Your Dog Day.
Aww.
It's National Siblings Day. Notice how it doesn't say hug your siblings. You can hug your dog, siblings. Encourage a Young Writer Day. It's Global Work From Home Day. Check. It's National Golfers Day, National Bookmobile Day, National Farm Animals Day, National Safety Pin Day. Yeah, somebody thought to have a day dedicated to the safety pin.
I mean, it was very innovative for its time.
That's what they're saying. It's, much like the talk box. It was innovative.
Safety pins are far more useful.
I want to get a talk box for the studio. I'd be like, "Good morning, Matt."
Yeah, well, now we've got the whole auto-tune thing. Do you believe?
Welcome
you
to Up North.
You can just do it with your voice, Greg.
What is happening at locally grown radio?
Well, we had an exciting day yesterday. Our CEO, Sage, came and visited us with Aaron also to talk about changes coming for our WIRI station and some potential ones as well for WFHR. So we've got exciting things happening, but, you know, on our they're going to be talking about campfire cooking on Friday during a Midday Magazine with some of our local Historic Point Boss people. And I don't know, do you guys like to cook over a campfire?
I did once upon a time when I was younger, like in a Boy Scout troop, but I haven't for the longest time.
I love it when Grubhub gets there to my campfire. It's great.
Melissa Kay, thank you so much.
Yes, always good to see you guys.
Yep, we'll see you next week. Coming up in our next hour, former DC police officer Michael Fanone on trying to stem the violent rhetoric in political speech these days, and Congressman Mark Bocan, all in our next hour on Up North News Radio on this Wednesday morning. You're Up North.